The next case is 07-1304, Marlington Local School District versus Jane Doe. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is John Hill, and along with my partner, Joy Oldfield, we represent the appellants in this case, who are the adoptive parents of this 10-year-old girl who was repeatedly sexually assaulted on a school bus. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Put your time on the clock there.
The question before the court here is, how will the court construct and interpret the undefined phrase negligent operation of a motor vehicle as contained in RC 2744-02B1? The answer to the question, Your Honors, is twofold. Number one, operation in this context must be defined in the context or with consideration for the type of vehicle that's at issue. And number two, in the context of a school bus, which is at issue here and in so many other cases, operation of a school bus includes all of the essential functions that the operator is either trained to do or authorized to do by law or required to do by law.
Counsel, if these events happened on the school playground, what's the outcome in terms of the immunity question under the statute?
Because under a different exception, the result would be, as I understand it, that there would not be liability for a school teacher or someone if they happened on the school.
Isn't there a negligent supervision of the playground provision in the?
As I understand it, and again, I haven't litigated that case, but that's the B4 exception, I believe, that says negligence on the grounds, et cetera, but has now been revised to say, you know, but only for physical defects. So the argument, that's the argument I understand the district has made here, is that, no, there wouldn't be liability here. I don't know if that's true or not.
No, there was in the original statute, which is what I thought.
Correct.
But the legislature's taken that out.
The legislature modified that different exception.
And these events occurred after that modification or not?
These events at issue in this case occurred after that modification, yes. I don't believe that's informative as to the question that's in front of the court today, regardless, Your Honor. The reason being that we're here and you are required to try to interpret a particular phrase, operation of motor vehicle. Whatever judicial decisions have been made under B4 have not involved interpreting that phrase or frankly interpreting any phrase even like it. That's the first reason I think it's not informative. The second point I'd make is this statute and the courts interpreting it draw all kinds of different lines. There's liability for something if it happens here, but not there. For example, there's liability for certain things if they happen in some places, but not in a juvenile detention facility or a jailhouse. That kind of line drawing and seemingly inconsistent results are throughout this statute and the cases interpreting it. So I acknowledge that argument they made. I don't believe it's informative to the critical question that's in front of the court.
We had a case, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was involving an emergency run by emergency vehicle, and the allegation was that the attendant inside the vehicle was negligent in putting in a drip or something like that, and we held that the acts of the paramedic inside the vehicle did not constitute operating the motor vehicle. How is how do you distinguish that from what's happening here?
Well, either in two ways. Factually, we're talking about a school bus, which I think is quite different. And the we have well-defined legislative and administrative rules about what school bus operators are supposed to do, which I don't know if they were in effect. I don't believe they were in that case. But again, this is a different, that's an exception that the legislature drew specifically. I think that by using let me say it a different way, Your Honor. I think the test and the focus of the decisions interpreting this so far have been focused improperly. I think that courts here in Ohio and elsewhere are trying to figure out what operation is by looking at things like, is the bus moving, or is the vehicle moving, or is some part of the vehicle moving? And I think that's what's led to this confusing and conflicting mishmash of decisions. I think that the test that we propose, and that was followed in the Groves case from the Second District, lends more certainty and is more indicative of legislative intent. If we look into what the job of the operator is, and not someone's opinion about what it is, but to clearly set forth rules or guidelines or regulations, I think that creates a framework that we can then analyze the issue. I think in a school bus case, that's important to do and easy to do and distinguishable from kind of nitpicking at an EMT who you have an expert who says should have done something else. I think both the facts of this case and the context are much different. The legislature has told us these are the things we want school bus drivers to do. We want them not only to be trained to control pupils, but they must control the conduct of the students on their bus. Those are rules of law in Ohio. And so I think any construction of operation that essentially neuters them can't be what the legislature intended. I'm unaware of anything where in an EMT situation where, for example, some administrative code regulation about how to properly hang a drip was violated. So I think it's a different situation.
But other appellate courts that have looked at it talked about dropping students off near a railroad, and they said that did not fall within the operation. They talked about selection of the route. That did not fall within operation. How do we draw the line as to what falls within operation?
I agree, Your Honor, and that's why did I interrupt you? I didn't mean to. I think the definition that we propose is much better at drawing lines. Those decisions that you've pointed out they've focused, for example, on, well, was the bus even present when the girl got hit on the railroad tracks, or was the bus moving or not? And it leads to those kind of results. As we have pointed out in our brief, some courts have said that would waive immunity. Other courts have said not. I think the test we propose is the best at line drawing and giving courts and litigators guidance. If there's a law or a regulation that says that the operator is required to do it or trained to do it, then that's part of operating the vehicle, and immunity is waived for that. It's a very simple test to apply. It draws clear lines, and it's not going to lead to, I would submit, inconsistent decisions like we've had so far. That's why I think so strongly that the focus of the court should not be on those kinds of things. Was the bus present when she got hit or not? Was some part of the bus moving when she got hit or not? I think if we look instead to what's the operator's job? What does the law tell us the bus driver or the operator is supposed to do? If it's a part of their job, then it's a part of operating the bus, and there's no immunity for it. If it's not a part of their job, then immunity would apply. To me, that's consistent with the way courts want to interpret statutes, and it has the added benefit of being a clear-cut, not a bright-line decision, but much closer than the one that we have that has yielded these inconsistent results.
Does the bus driver select the route? I mean, wouldn't that be part of the job?
Absolutely.
So you'd have a strong disagreement with I guess that was the 12th or the 10th district in connection with that case.
I do, Your Honor. I have a disagreement with that result. I think, frankly, that the court, the Ohio Appellate Court, the first time they addressed this issue, got it right, and that was in Groves. And then after that, they shifted their focus away. In Groves, they tried to figure out, you know, helping this handicapped student get off the bus, is that something that was an integral part of the job? Is that something that the bus driver was trained to do? They said yes, and so they found that immunity was waived. When they started getting into these cases, if you look at them, they started focusing on things like, well, you know, this child, it's true that the bus drivers are trained how to safely drop a child off. And in fact, this bus driver in the one of the cases you're talking about dropped a young kid off so that they had to walk across a busy highway. That's a violation of their training and a violation, frankly, of the administrative code. And the court said, well, but the bus wasn't present. I don't know that the bus being present or not really informs us about what it should be operation. I think what informs us about what's operation of a vehicle is what are the things the bus driver is supposed to do.
Counsel, the regulations to which you refer about the bus driver's responsibility to control the conduct of the students, those are regulations adopted by the Education Department. How do we know that the General Assembly intended in its use of the word operation that managing the conduct of the students is a part of operating the school bus in what I would call the traditional sense of actually driving the bus, not negligently?
I think we know some things, Your Honor, and we can safely assume some others. We know that there's a statute, I believe it's I'm not going to be able to say it off the top of my head, 451175 maybe, where the legislature said to the Department of Education, you shall enact rules about how a bus driver will safely operate. And then they delegated that to the department, so you're correct. But I think it's also safe to assume that when they used this word operation, they knew what kinds of vehicles were at issue, including school buses, and they knew what kinds of rules, if not specifically generally, would be put in place. And that's why a school bus in the context is so important, Your Honor. The operation of a school bus is at its heart about getting kids safely from point A to point B. That's what the operation is. And if you rely on the definitions that are proffered by the district and in some of these cases about movement, we can have some really absurd results. You could inadvertently be operating the vehicle if you shoo a fly away and hit the lever that closes the door on a kid and hurt someone. That's operating the vehicle because a piece of the bus was moving. On the other hand, if you're a bus driver like here, who you're trained and required to control the kids on the bus, you only have four students behind you, one of whom is being anally penetrated on the floor, and you don't turn around and look at it and stop it, that's not negligently operating a bus.
Well, if you turn around, the bus driver turns around and someone runs out in front of the bus, and the bus driver misses that fact and hits the person or hits a car. I mean, you're asking the bus driver to be, this activity, as you say, was underneath the seat of the bus, terrible activity, and you'd think a bus driver might be aware of it. There was also an aide on the bus, was there not?
On this bus, for reasons we don't understand,
there was not.
There was,
I guess.
Not.
Usually there was, but this one there was not.
I think those would be factual defenses to a case like that, Your Honor, and probably legitimate factual defenses. They're not at issue here, but more importantly, you know, those kinds of issues can be decided and even decided on summary judgment. But the cases are now being thrown out on immunity, and that, I would submit, is not appropriate, and I don't believe what the legislature intended. I think you could still defend that case and possibly even get summary judgment. But obviously the facts here, this wasn't a single incident. This was, according to the child, every day for weeks. And to accept that that's not negligent operation while batting the door open accidentally would be negligent operation, to me is
could the bus driver here be negligent for his or her conduct irrespective of operating the school bus?
Could the bus driver individually be?
Yeah. I don't know if the school bus driver was hired by, was an employee of the school system or not, but could the bus driver be sued personally?
Within the, she's an employee, in this case she's an employee of the district, and so within the confines of the exceptions or, you know, the application of the statute, the willful, reckless, et cetera.
You talk about intent of legislature in the school grounds case, and I will disclose that I dissented in the school grounds case. We found that the negligent supervision of children was school grounds, was operating of school grounds, and the legislature overturned our decision legislatively. So there's a strong parallel there between that and what occurs on the bus in terms of negligent supervision. How do we distinguish the legislative intent when they clearly told us they disagreed with how we read their statute and clarified it by saying it does not involve negligence, it only involves physical damage on the premises?
Under a different section of the statute, and I don't believe, Your Honor, that act was a legislative statement of intent that we don't want there to be a claim for negligently permitting a rape or an assault. I think that's how the courts have interpreted it since then, but it's not as if those cases and that statute are interpreting an undefined phrase even. You know, I mean, so I think there are a lot of ways we can try to divine legislative intent. I would respectfully submit that's not as reliable as one, for example, where we know what a bus driver's duties are. Are we to assume that the legislature intended, with this operation exception, that with one hand it was saying, train these drivers and make sure these drivers control the students, but with the other hand in this statute they were saying, but if they don't do it, you're immune? I think that's a more strong statement of legislative intent, and it stays within the exception that's at issue here.
You've used your time, Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Smith.
May it please the court, my name is David Smith, and I represent the Marlington School District Board of Education. Your Honors, I believe that the issue properly framed in this case is whether pupil supervision is within the definition of operation of a school bus under the facts of this case. And the board's position is that whatever else might be encompassed within that definition, pupil supervision isn't. And we believe that this holding of the Fifth District in paragraph 24 of its opinion is certainly proper because it results in a consistency in the law, which we believe is one of the purposes of such laws, and that goes to the questioning that Mr. Hill answered.
Counsel, before you go any further, you say that pupil supervision is not a responsibility of the bus driver.
It's not part of the operation of a motor vehicle.
You said it's not part of their responsibility. Correct?
If I said that, I misspoke. It's that pupil supervision is not within the definition of operation of a motor vehicle under the facts of this case.
Well, looking at the Administrative Code 3301 that sets out the areas of training and then the areas to which a certificate is given and the hours of training that are devoted to each one of these segments of education, pupil management is one of them. Is there a difference between pupil supervising and pupil management? And I look at other requirements of hours devoted to appropriate behavior management, physical handling, effective communication. It seems to me that there is an expectation of a bus driver to be able, you know, they even have public relations as part of one of their 15-hour courses. I'm uncertain as to why the bus driver is required to have that sort of training if pupil management or supervision or however you want to define the term is not part of their job.
First of all, Your Honor, I do use supervision and management synonymously. Second, the fact that it is part of their job may not be part of the operation of a motor vehicle. Certainly public relations and having good public relations, which I believe would mean being able to communicate effectively with the parents of the students, if not the students themselves, couldn't be considered part of the operation of a motor vehicle. Neither could first aid and bloodborne pathogen training and those responsibilities be considered part of the operation of a motor vehicle, which is why we believe that the courts, especially Montgomery County, which seems to have a slew of these cases, has reached the proper result, that operation has to do with more than driving, obviously.
But you cannot operate a motor vehicle, a bus in this case, without this training, correct?
That is correct. And when you are certified based upon driving the bus.
And successfully completing all this other.
You're correct, Your Honor, having familiarity with those areas of training, but when you get your license and you get your certification, you drive the bus. And driving the bus means getting the kids on the bus, getting the bus safely, which then would mean the passengers, to the destination and having them disembark from the bus.
But
in the Groves, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If you say getting the passengers, transporting them safely, this child was not transported safely.
In one sense, you're entirely correct. However, I think that that if a driver of a bus were looking at the students and not at the road ahead, that would be negligent operation, as my torts professor said, small n negligence, unless there were some injury. Well, that would be negligent operation of a motor vehicle. It's almost an argument that we're talking about the greater good here. You have a bus on the road. You do not have an aid. I think finding that the definition includes supervision or management of pupils would be an unfunded mandate. It would require someone else on the bus. You can't have a bus driver responsible to watch the children behind him or her while moving that bus from point A to point B.
Oh, no, that's incredible. Anybody who ever rode a school bus knows that bus drivers do both, have to do both. It's imperative they do both. And they generally do both well.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They generally do both well. They manage the children on the bus, supervise the children on the bus, stop the bus if they must to discipline children.
They
have cameras, they have mirrors, and that's an essential part of their task, is to manage this and supervise the children on the bus.
If that is part of their job duties, as
well, it absolutely is.
But it is not part of the operation of a motor vehicle. But by analogy, Your Honor, if a teacher in a classroom, by poor, negligent supervision, permits an injury to a child, the General Assembly has said that because that injury is not due to a physical defect, there should be no liability on the part of the board, and that's what this case is about, on the board's liability.
So if a child is raped in the classroom while the teacher's there, your reading of the statute is immunity.
For the Board of Education, because the B4 exception says, and is due to a physical defect.
Well, that's immunity for everybody because the statute makes the liability of the teacher the liability of the board, does it not?
Well, the immunities of the employee are different, and he is immune unless he is manifestly outside his or her scope of employment, which could incur liability upon that teacher. My point, Your Honor, is that a prime rule of teaching is that you face the children, that you're engaged with the children.
Well, you have to face the blackboard as well.
Sometimes you do, and I can provide anecdotal evidence that you want to turn around as quickly as you can from my teaching experience. But that's just the inverse of driving the bus.
Bring you back to this case, Mr. Smith. Do I understand your argument that there are a number of responsibilities that a bus driver has as Justice O'Connor had cataloged. But the legislature has restricted the exception to immunity to only those involving operation or driving of the bus. Is that your position?
Your Honor, my position is that, except that I don't use the term driving and operation necessarily as synonyms.
Is operation more expansive than driving in your view?
Yes, it is, because it involves any disembarking or embarking of students. For example, the case is at the Groves case, I believe, where the appellate court said, gee, there's a ramp. Operation of that ramp would be part of operating the motor vehicle for purposes of the immunity analysis in that case. So that certainly is beyond steering and braking and accelerating.
So what is the definition that you're proposing, or what is the rule that you think we use to define the operation of a school bus for purposes of this statute?
The rule that I would propose is that operation must be related to the driving of the bus, the getting the kids on and off the bus, and operating any equipment incidental thereto driving that bus, but not pupil supervision. I think the Groves case said, the court said, well, this was certainly, supervision was certainly part of the duties and was part of the operation of a motor vehicle. And the and, not or, but it was the and, because it was part of the operation of the motor vehicle, I contend, that is how immunity was waived. If it were simply part of the job responsibilities, not operation of the motor vehicle, then the analysis would have to go to other sections of 2744 to determine if there was another immunity. There was a question asked about the emergency vehicles. Of course, B1C, I think, addresses emergency vehicles specifically, but someone else in that bus, if there were an aide in the bus, and it was alleged that negligent conduct on the part of the aide caused injury, I don't believe that would be part of the operation of a motor vehicle. That would be negligent supervision of children, and if there were an exception to the immunity for that, that might incur liability. So I don't think duties or training of the driver is synonymous with operation of a motor vehicle. The legislature could have said negligent driving if that's what it meant. On the other hand, the legislature could have said any negligence in connection with the transportation of students, but it didn't say that. It said operation of a motor vehicle. And therefore, I don't know if I've articulated the rule well, because again, I think these definitions are sort of put together piecemeal, but at least under the facts of this case, I don't believe that operation of a motor vehicle includes the management of these students, regardless of their having been trained in it, just as they are trained in other duties, which may or may not be part of the operation of a motor vehicle.
Counsel, help me understand this then. You say that the operation, the immunity extends to anything with the operation, or the statute addresses anything operation related to driving or equipment. Everything but the supervision of children. The responsibility of the bus driver is all of that except for the supervision of the children. Has no responsibility, liability for the supervision of children on the bus. Is that your statement?
No, Your Honor. If I might try again, I'm poorly articulating this. There is the operation of a motor vehicle, the operation of a school bus in this case. And what duties comprise that? What conduct comprises that? That, I argue, is not synonymous with the duties of the employee. The employee's duties may go beyond the operation of a motor vehicle, but unless the injury is caused by the negligent operation, the school board incurs no liability. If the employee misconduct in a tortious fashion might incur liability on that employee, but that's a separate issue, and that's under 2744 in different parts.
That's only if the employee caused the injury. That's what you're referencing as far as personal liability. That's how you would envision personal liability if there was, for example, a tort committed by a bus driver or a teacher.
That's correct. And under the statute, it would have to be reckless or wanton misconduct.
Okay.
Counsel, let me take you to a slightly different hypothetical to see how you would draw the lines. The school bus driver leaves the child off in a inherently unsafe place. The child is injured once off the bus due to what is the obvious dangerousness. I guess that would be back maybe to the railroad crossing kind of thing, or the school bus supervisor plans the routes in a fashion. There's a terrible accident of a child crossing a busy highway. When a lawsuit unfolds and the allegation is, you could have run this route in a fashion that left the bus come down the other side of the road so no children had to ever cross the busy route, which I've seen done in communities that have a treacherous road. All of that would be immune because it's
not. It would
not
be
the
part of the operation of a motor vehicle, yes, Your Honor. The conduct of the driver.
Anything that happens once the child steps off the bus is immune. Would be immune.
I can fashion an exception to that, and that would be if the bus driver, whose responsibility it is to run that route in a timely fashion and to drop the children off at their appointed destinations, were to let the child off the bus at a location other than the appointed destination, that might fall within the negligent operation of the vehicle. If again, then we would get beyond immunity and have to have the negligence.
So
analysis.
If the bus driver left the child off, not at his home, but up the street at the home of a pedophile, for example, and then something bad happened, that would fall within the negligent operation of the bus.
That would fall within the operation of the bus, and it could be negligent. I think, once you get past immunity, Your Honor, then you would have to go through the
right.
negligence analysis.
But yes. You say immunity wouldn't apply and could conceivably not imply in that situation,
I agree, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, in the situation we have here, I think the Fifth District Court of Appeals properly decided this narrow issue under the facts of this case, and we respectfully ask that the Fifth District opinion be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. My opponent is a good lawyer who, as I understand it, does almost nothing but this kind of law, and he had to keep telling you how hard it was to articulate the rule that he wanted. It's not his fault. It's a bad rule. That's why the cases are all over the place. The rule that we advance is clear, it's consistent with legislative intent, it makes sense. If it's a part of what the driver's trained to do, authorized to do, required to do, then it is not within immunity. And concerns about whether we're gonna have crazy cases will be resolved by the system on summary judgment on negligence or other issues. The rule that's followed or proposed by the district, the rule that's followed in all these cases, other than the Groves case, is flawed at its heart. And
you would apply that to, for example, the training that the bus driver received with respect to airborne pathogens from blood, for example, that would fall within the operation of the bus for purposes of this statutory analysis?
Because there's
training in connection with that.
The answer is yes, although it's hard to fathom how such a case would come around. It would be defended possibly on negligence or other issues, but remember, we're not talking about liability, Your Honor, only about immunity. For purposes of whether determining that should be immune as a matter of law, if they're trained in it and they do it negligently, they're not immune for it. I think
Mr.
that's
Hill, finished?
I think that's a rule that makes sense and will clarify this horrifically muddled area of the law.
Let me ask you, the rules adopted by the Department of Education all have this prefatory language in each section of the rules. You know they're divided into different types of training that is required for school bus drivers. And for instance, 3301A310, number one, prior to a driver being assigned to operate a school bus with pupils on board, and then later in subsection two, prior to operating a school bus with pupils on board, instruction shall consist of, and there's another reference to, prior to operating a bus with preschool children, special education students. Does that just beg the question, prior to operating suggests that before you can get behind the wheel of the bus, you have to have all of this instruction. Does that language just beg the question in terms of defining operating what operation means, or does it work against your argument?
I don't think it does. Before I'm allowed to practice law, I have to get a license. I don't think that defines, and I have to get training in school. I don't think it has anything to do with once I'm practicing, what is practicing or what's not. I think that the legislature's choice of this broad word, operation, is significant and informative as to their intent, more than some of the other things like the before exception. You know, this court's, Your Honor's operation of this court, it involves a lot of different things and processes. It doesn't just involve the layperson's kind of initial reaction. Well, operation of the court is sitting up there and listening to argument.
It's much easier than driving a school bus full of children, I can tell you.
I'll bet.
Thank you.
We'd ask you to reverse, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.